So we have Mia Herrera with us. Mia Herrera's short stories feature articles and reviews have appeared in various online and print publications like CG Magazine, Live in Limbo, Side Street Review, Hard House Review, and TOK. Writing The New Toronto, Book 7, Mia is a recipient of the Youth Scholarship Award from the Tatamagouche Center and Writers Trust Fund Scholarship. Mia graduated from the University of Toronto's Trinity College with an Honours Bachelor of Arts in English Literature, Book and Media Studies, and Cinema Studies in 2009. In 2011, she obtained a certificate in creative writing from Humber College, and in 2014, obtained a certificate in adult education staff training from Humber College. Mia Herrera makes a living in marketing and communications, working for local government and policing organizations. She specializes in social media and online communications. Her book, which is the reason why we're having her here, is called Shade, and it's from Inanna Publications. Those crazy cats at Inanna Publications are always sending me some fantastic reading for this year. Luciana, if you're listening, thank you for my reading list. It's been fantastic, and this is another fantastic book, Shade by Mia Herrera, and I haven't even said hello yet. Hi, Mia. Hello.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me here.
It was about promoting, you know, it was, you know, the big drum roll to you being here. That's what it was about. So this is Shade. This is Shade. And one of the things that I love about the book is, okay, well, it's so much. There's so much. Now, here's what I wanted to know. How important was it? Because you were taking us on a journey. We went from Tim Hortons to the Philippines.
Yes.
How important was it geographically for the story to be in the Philippines?
I believe it was very important because it provided the contrast that the character needed. And a lot of it was a journey, not just geographically, but also culturally and also from a family perspective as well. So keeping it in one place, I feel, wouldn't have had the same impact as traveling somewhere far. It was almost like removing the main character from her comfort zone completely and bringing her to somewhere completely exotic to her.
And the reader, too.
Yes.
From a reading standpoint, it's like, okay, we're going to the Philippines. Wow, interesting. Now, here's one thing. Another thing I wanted to ask was, did you spend any time abroad to write this book?
I didn't spend time abroad to write the book, but it actually started off as a travel memoir based on a trip that I myself had taken to the Philippines for the first time to visit. You know, my parents had come from the Philippines. So it started off as nonfiction, and it quickly changed into a novel when I realized that sticking strictly to fact just couldn't cover all of the things that I wanted to cover and explore. But it was very much rooted in that geography and in that place at that time.
Now, I don't know if you did it on purpose or not, but I noticed contrasts in the novel. And I guess one of the reasons why I noticed the contrast is because of cultural affiliations. I mean, and you're a Philippine descent. Is that correct to say Filipina or Philippine descent?
Both are correct.
Both are correct. Okay. So, and of course, when your culture is rooted with certain religions, let's say Catholicism, and me as a Sicilian Catholic, boy, do I know that those cultural affiliations. There's a certain contrast in terms of traditionalism. Did you mean to highlight the contrast between, you know, traditions being behind the times and traditions that we have to embrace?
Contrast was actually a large theme for me as I was writing the book, and it was something that I was thinking about. It was almost, so I guess the idea is that coming from a first world country, for example, Benny is coming from a more modern place, and she goes to the Philippines with that set of ideas, that she's coming from a more modern place, going to a third world country. So I kind of had that in mind, and the contrast set up there was one that I kind of explored throughout the novel, because it's true that Philippine culture, for example, is a little bit more traditional, a lot more traditional. So it was interesting to compare, because a lot of that was content that Benny had to navigate in order to understand exactly where she stood within those contrasts.
Growing up in a very religious family, the church that I went to was divided into two separate cultures. There were the Italian Canadians that were there, and there were the Filipinos or Filipinas that were there. It was both were unbelievably religious, but you highlight two things in the book. Coming back culturally, is you highlight the religion. You kind of touch on the religion, but more so you kind of highlight the superstition too. Mm-hmm. There's some spooky moments in the book. And was that something also that you wanted to illustrate?
It was definitely something that I wanted to illustrate. And it's interesting that you mentioned that, because one of the earlier versions of my novel actually included a question of religion. I actually focused on that very heavily, and I realized that those were two very large things, the supernatural and the religious, to bite off. So I kind of focused on the supernatural more. And it was something that I wanted to highlight, because it is something that is very much in that Filipino culture, the ghost stories, the kind of supernatural, the superstition. So that was definitely something that was included in the book on purpose.
And I noticed too, one of the aspects, Benny has some sincere challenges. It starts off with a relationship challenge, and then the challenges get a bit more dense, because there's a family member with kind of a substance abuse problem as well. Were those obstacles essential for any kind of growth with Benny?
For sure. When I started the novel, I wanted to kick it off in a way that Benny had to do something to get out of her comfort zone. So she starts off, living at home with her mother in the same place where she was born and raised, working at a comfortable but dead-end job. And she's just kind of been going through life without question. She's in her mid-20s. She thinks the next step, and with many traditional families, is, you live at home and then you meet someone nice and then you get married and you get a house and stuff. And she starts off that way, and everything is thrown for a loop. And I'm not giving out any spoilers here, because it's right on the back cover, but basically she ends up being broken up with after being in a long-term relationship. So a few readers asked me, what was the point of that first initial breakup? What was the point of introducing this character that you kind of connect with, which is her boyfriend, and then within two chapters he's gone? But I think that a lot of situations for people, growth is needed, mm-hmm. because you're pushed out of your comfort zone, not because you willingly and consciously decide to get out of it. Often it's not necessarily a choice that you make. It's just something mm-hmm. that happens upon you, and that's what happened to Benny.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just too, everybody doesn't get along with their parents, right? Most people have difficult relationships with their parents, right? They're not always, it's not always how it's depicted in shows and movies, right? There's always complications, and that's another obstacle for Benny as well, because you highlight the unconventional relationship that she has, say, with her mother. It's kind of like this sort of distant sort of familiarity with the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that I just wanted to touch on was in terms of like the writing process for this. You said that it started out nonfiction, but it eventually evolved into a fictional account. And I'm just wondering, was there any additional, in terms of knowing your own culture and geography and whatnot, was there any research that you had to do for any aspect of this book?
It's interesting, because a lot of the research I had was right at my fingertips in terms of, my parents being a wealth of information. They actually really helped me in reading the book before it went out, and they were able to give me just ideas in terms of geography and, what would be realistic, what would be unrealistic. And it was very important for me to have their insight, because I'm very much aware that I have a limited perspective as someone who's lived here, grown up here, been born here, and really only visited the Philippines for a short period of time. On the one hand, that is Benny's perspective as well. But on the other hand, you want that authenticity, and my parents were really kind in giving me that support and really reading that through with me. So really, the wealth of information was just right there. They were right there.
That's great that they were supportive. Did you have to ask for any permission?
Permission or forgiveness?
Oh, yeah, I guess both. Both.
Well, I made sure to share the story with my parents before it went to print. Even before I started sending it to publishers, I shared it with my father, who is a reader, and he looked through it and he gave me his feedback. And when I got the offer from Anana, then I shared it with my mother, and she read through it and gave me her feedback. And they were actually a very important part of my editing process, because I wanted to make sure that they were okay with it. So partly permission, and I guess afterwards when they started to realize the impact of having the book published, then a little bit of that forgiveness, because there's still that confusion with some relatives or friends who might mistake the idea that, you know, Benny is me, for example, which is 100% not the case.
Right.
But everyone kind of brings something to the story, right?
Yeah,
of course. You have like the distant, you know, acquaintance that gives you a shout and says, hey, I was in your book. And you're like, no, sorry, but, you know, that kind of thing. So when that started happening, then there was the forgiveness bit as well.
It could have some interesting repercussions. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie The Best Man with Taye Diggs.
Oh, no.
He writes a novel, right? And everybody at first is so happy for him that he's written this novel. But then they're reading the novel and they're noticing that they're actual characters in the novel. And not everybody likes the way that they turn out. Anyway, okay, so one of the things I wanted to ask is if you would give us a little taste of your novel.
Certainly. So I have a reading here, and as I mentioned earlier, so the novel starts off with Benny basically going through a breakup and deciding to travel to the Philippines to visit her father, who's been largely absent from her life. He's been living apart from her and her mother for some time. So in this section of the novel, she's with her father and her mother, and it's one of their first days in the Philippines, and they've been visiting all these old places that her parents had frequented when they were there. And they happen to pass by and decide to stop in on a relative of Benny's. Her name is Melissa. She's her father's cousin. So this is a section from that part. We pass through a small unlit yard scattered with stones and crawling vines. The garden's a wild patch of grass and flowers. We enter into Melissa's brightly lit foyer before she ushers us into a small sunroom where we take our seats on a mishmash of plush velvet sofas, hardback chairs, and plaid recliners. Bobby enters carrying a tray loaded with a coffee pot and mugs and sets them on the coffee table before leaving us alone. Melissa flops onto a plaid recliner across the table from us, slopping coffee over her cup's rim. She catches the spill using the palm of her hand. Are your coffees okay? She asks. Would you like anything else? Something to snack on, perhaps? Not unless you have something hard. Rum, vodka, or brandy, perhaps? Dad asks. Melissa laughs. Funny one, Ned. You're a real joker. Though I do remember your preferred drink of choice from when you weren't such an old man. B&B, Benedictine and brandy, right? Coincidence that that's your name, Benny? She asks, turning to me with a wink. I think not. She settles further into her recliner. Anyway, when did you all arrive? When are you leaving, and how long has it been since you've been home? Benny and I just arrived, Mom says. We'll be leaving in a few weeks, and it's been 26 years since we've last been home. Both Mom and Dad fail to mention that Dad's been living here for more than a year, and the conversation barrels on. 26 years? Why did you wait so long? Melissa asks. I must say, Ned, I never took you and Maria for the seagoing types, the ones who would jump ship and never look back. Are you kidding me? You know I always wanted to leave the Philippines, Dad says, but that's news to me. As far as my recollection goes, Dad always wanted to return here. I'd always assumed he donned rose-colored glasses of nostalgia for the Philippines the moment he left. And what a world there is to see, Melissa. The pyramids in Egypt and the glaciers in Alaska, the canals of Venice and the Alhambra in Granada, the cars in Monaco and the ladies in Vegas. Dad smacks his lips. There's so much to see and so many lives to live beyond Manila. I do a mental check of all the places Dad mentions as he speaks. He's been all over the world, North and South America, Asia, Africa, Europe, Australia, and Antarctica. I have the souvenirs to prove it. A little plastic pyramid, a stuffed penguin toy, casino chips, postcards with foreign stamps, and more hotel stationery than I can count. He's been everywhere, but the most exotic place Mom and I have ever been is here. You make it sound grand, but you're missing out on a lot, Ned, Melissa says, throwing an arm out in a showcase gesture of her darkened sunroom. Especially living in Canada, what do you do in Canada anyways? Ice skate? Build snowmen? You can skate in her malls, for goodness sake. I bet they don't have skating rinks in the malls in Canada. I think of Georgina. where the idea of fun for most people I know is a bush party in the summer and Netflix in the winter. No, we don't have skating rinks in the malls, but it's only because we have plenty of space for them naturally outside, Dad says. Anyways, I can't build snowmen in the mall, so there. I've never seen Dad build a snowman in my life. My winter memories consist of him complaining about the bitter cold as he smoked in his undershirt and boxers with his belly resting over the railing of our back deck. Actually, I think SML had a promo recently where they made fake snow for snow angels and snowmen, so you're really not gaining anything in Canada after all. The Philippines has everything, fun, food, and family. All that good blood gone and not a word from you men since you left. Oh, Melissa, what would you expect from the men in our family? Daily phone calls, Mom laughs. What she doesn't say is that even she and I, Dad's wife and daughter, don't hear regularly from him. Typical men, Melissa scoffs again. I suppose not. I do wish you all stayed, though. Tell me how you've been. Dad gives Melissa a summary of our lives and the lives of Miguel and my grandmother, failing to mention that he's lived anywhere but Canada in the past 10 years. It's surreal hearing the surface stories I've told him about my school, work, and hobbies, repeated almost verbatim by Dad with such ease. I'm surprised to learn he'd listened at all. And though I know better, I could almost be convinced that he'd been there for it all, too.
This is CIUT 89.5 FM. My name is Valentino Asenza. You're listening to Howl. We're on Twitter at Howl895FM, at Howl895FM. I would like to, at this time, just acknowledge my tech, Sean. He's on his own tonight. Chris is in Las Vegas partying. So, Chris, put $300 on 21 for me, if you're listening. At the roulette table. I'm good for it. Anyway, yeah, thank you so much for that that excerpt. One of the things that I wanted to ask you was you also have a day job.
Yes.
You're on maternity leave right now.
Yes, I am.
But was this novel written while you were working?
Oh, gosh, this novel took a long time to complete. It's been 7 years on and off. So I was picking it up, putting it back down again. So it was long nights and then long, long periods of not writing at all. But I've been working the whole time. So, yes, it has been written while I've been working full time.
So that's a challenge in itself, because I know that with poetry, you're always going piece by piece a lot of the time. And with novels... one of the biggest words that I'm always hearing with any novelist is momentum.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you find momentum in the confines of a day job?
It was actually pretty tough to keep the momentum going, and the pile of rough drafts and hundreds, literally, of cut pages probably can attest to that, because I would write and I would revisit it after a year or 2 years and it would just feel wrong. I think it was just a matter of reaching out in the community. So I would, you know, find fellow writers or try and join different writers' organizations or retreats. Tatamagush was one, which is actually where I first started writing the novel. Diaspora Dialogues was another one. And joining programs that really gave me that deadline. Because to be honest, when you have a day job and a million other things going on, it's hard to make writing the number one priority, or even any priority on the list. So I found that finding other writers and finding places or programs that offered those deadlines really, really lit the fire under me.
It was, deadlines are, they're helpful. Mm-hmm. They drive me crazy, but they're but they're helpful. Now, what kind of a response have you gotten from the Filipino community with respect to this novel?
It's interesting. I haven't been able to get in touch with many members from the Filipino community. One group in particular, though, I had the benefit and the fortune of being invited to speak at a secondary institution where there was a large number of Filipino students. So that was my main and pretty much only interaction with the Filipino community since the novel launched. And really, I think the main thing that struck me was that they were just surprised that I existed. They were like, oh, you're Filipino-Canadian, and you wrote something? Like, it was very much like one of those weird moments where it was like, oh, yeah, that's something we've done or whatever. So that was fun, and it was inspiring as well, because they were young students, and there were a few people in the class that had wanted, or they do want to be writers as well. So that was the main response. Otherwise, it's been really positive, and there's been lots of support there.
Well, I mean, as somebody immersed in the Toronto spoken word community, there are plenty of Filipino poets for any Filipino people that are out there, yes, Mia did write this, Shade, from an Anna publication. She most definitely wrote this. And there are a lot of Filipino Canadians out there that have written some fantastic things. I've had them on my show. Patrick DeBellin has been on here. He's a name in the poetry community. But Mia, you wrote a fantastic book. How can people get your book?
Thank you. People can get the book from the publisher's website, so inanna.ca. That's INANNA.ca. It's available in paperback and ebook format. It's also available on Amazon.ca, Amazon.com, and it's also available on Chapters Indigo, their website. It's also in hard copy in a few select Chapters stores, but of course it will probably be there more if people go into the stores and request it or order it, so you can also order it that way. And those are the main places. I strongly encourage you to visit the Inanna website, though, and support the press. They're a great team.
From my own perspective, the only thing I have to say to you is thank you for taking me on that unbelievably adventurous trip to the Philippines in your book. And I heavily recommend this book for anybody out there. I also recommend Vanessa Shields' poetry book, Look at Her, from Black Moss Press. I want to thank the both of you for coming on the show tonight. Thank you, Vanessa Shields. Thank you, Mia Herrera. I want to say thank you also to Sean, my board tech. Nancy Bullis will be back in the chair next week. Stay tuned for those sexy cats from Sex City coming up at 11 p.m. We are going to go out with one of my favorite Canadian singer-songwriters of all time. This is Miss Sarah McLachlan from her album Touch. This is The Path of Thorns on CIUT 89.5 FM. Peace and good night.
To most would offend.